50,000 people were watching Alan Jackson prior to game one outside. A few years from now, it'll be 350,000.
Well, way down yonder on the Chattahoochee, it gets hotter than a hoochie-coochie.
What gets hotter than a hoochie-coochie? Come on.
Most everyone in the lower bowl standing. Along now, Goodrill scores! And by Dumoulin to the back. And Yossi stick fails him. Arvidsson around behind. Defended by Dumoulin. Side of the net. Through traffic now to Kunitz. Kunitz cannot step by. And a chance now for Smith, who's roaring on in.
Now Yossi, 7 minutes remaining, third period. Nashville Predators with a 4-1 lead in game three. Predators look to enter the Pittsburgh zone. Here comes Yonkrook down the right side, dropping it off for Ekholm. Fire, score!
You never knew how much that muddy water meant to me, but I learned how to swim and I learned who I was. A lot about living and a little about love.
Man, that was loud. Huh?
PK, is it as easy to say as this started in the warm-up, how electrifying the warm-up was?
Well, it was great. I mean, even before the warm-up, just driving into the rink. I mean, we saw TV before the game. The whole Broadway strip was packed with people. And we knew what it was going to be like coming back home, and we knew we wanted to take advantage of it. And we did. That's one game now. We're going to move forward.
All right, and that's the first time in two-plus hours we have heard from PK Subban on this show. Stay tuned for the next 2 hours on Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690.
Hockey insider Pierre Maguire, brought to you by Ye Olde Orchard Pub, with six locations in and around Montreal. YeOldOrchard.com.
He told me my breath smelled, but I don't know. I used some Listerine before the game, so I don't know what he's talking about. Just driving into the rink. I mean, we saw on TV before the game, the whole Broadway strip was packed with people, and we knew what it was going to be like coming back home, and we knew we wanted to take advantage of it, and we did. That's one game now. We're going to move forward.
Right in the middle of everything, including a post-game conversation with PK Subban. Pierre Maguire, how are you?
I'm good, Mitch. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. I noticed my phone rang in the middle of something important earlier today.
Well, I was watching practice, so I just wanted to touch base with you.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. That scene in Nashville, what would you say about it, having been there, done that?
I've been doing a lot of games here this spring. That was the most electric, only because of what was going on outside the building. Outside the building was unbelievable. Ma'am, I just talked to the president of NBC Sports, Mark Lazarus, who just flew in, and he was watching it on TV, and he goes, was it really that loud at ice level? I said, the only place I've ever heard that loud at ice level was Game 6 here against St. Louis, and when I coached in Game 3 in the Stanley Cup Final in 92 in Old Chicago Stadium. But Old Chicago Stadium probably in those days held 23 or 24,000. This place is lucky if it holds 17,000. But I would tell you that it was as loud or louder than during the anthem in Game 3 of the 92 Final. And I've been in a lot of NHL rinks since. None of them have been as loud as 92 Final and this one here for Game 3, pardon me, but Game 1 of their home series here in Nashville.
PK, of course, part of the crew that kept Malkin-Crosby shotless. Long conversation with Phil Kessel and Rick Tocchet. You're talking about the three main guns here offensively for the Pittsburgh Penguins. What are the chances that that neither of them do anything tonight? I expect at least two of the three to have some kind of impact tonight.
This reminds me so much of Game 3 in Ottawa. Ottawa did a tap dance on Pittsburgh, blew him out of the building, got Marc-Andre Fleury pulled, got Matt Murray in the net, and look at what happened in Game 4. Pittsburgh steamrolled Ottawa, right in Ottawa, and then they crushed them again in Game 5. So just be careful. Game 5, and then obviously Game 6 back in Ottawa, and then Game 7 and Pitt. But no, this is reminding me a lot of what happened in the previous series where Ottawa really had their way in Game 3, Pittsburgh had their way in Game 4. If Nashville lets their foot off the accelerator, they're in trouble.
They're hungry. I mean, they like cheap puck and skate so fast, and we lose guys, you know, we lose puck, you know, puck jump sometimes. We need play simple, you know, it's like we play it's this building. It's so loud. We understand they push us like every shift, every period.
There is Malkin on the Predators, seeming to be hungrier than the Penguins were on Saturday. I suspect that won't be an issue tonight for Pittsburgh.
No, because they hadn't been in this building. I've been trying to tell you and all the listeners and anybody that cares to listen. I spent a lot of time here this spring. This is as rambunctious as an environment as you're going to find in professional sport. I don't just mean the NHL. I mean all of it. Football, baseball, basketball, hockey. This is as rambunctious and as intimidating as any theater in any professional sports league. And if you're not prepared for it, and you can try to prepare for it all you want, but until you've gone through it once, you're not ready for it. They'll be much more prepared for it, I think, Pittsburgh, here in Game 4 than they were in Game 3.
Pretty amazing. I had said before, it's a little bit similar to a European soccer match where everybody's on the same page and knows exactly what to do and when to do it.
I think it's great. I just think the atmosphere is great. There's a lot of energy in the building. I think our players really enjoy it. I think they embrace the moment. You know, this is the best time of year to play. It's exciting hockey.
The fans going after Sidney Crosby, they went after everybody, and of course Peter Laviolette and Mike Sullivan on. It's choreographed, right, Pierre? This whole all this chanting is choreographed in a section of the rink.
Well, they know what they're doing. That sing-song chant you hear where they go, Mary, Mary, you just bleep, 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 that's a college thing. That's been going on for years in college hockey. I can tell you, I coached a lot of college hockey games in some pretty hard buildings like Liner Rink in Cornell, the Bright Center at Harvard, out in Grand Forks, North Dakota, the old Dane County Coliseum at Wisconsin. I mean, it was pretty rambunctious in those buildings too. But college hockey doesn't get the same scrutiny as the Stanley Cup Final. Most people didn't realize about Nashville until the Western Conference Final. People in Chicago know it. People in Detroit know it. People in St. Louis know it just because they've been natural territorial rivals for a long time. But most people in the league have no idea what this place is about. Now they're starting to realize what it's about.
So the past few games in the final, we've seen goals in rapid succession, often within 4 or 5 minutes. Is that something that coaching staffs become aware of? And is there any way to take control of that and harness it on offense but stop it from happening on defense?
Well, that's why you have to be so careful who you put back on the ice. That's such a great question, Rod, because it is an important part of this kind of a series because it's clearly momentum-based. The first two games, Pittsburgh had huge surges in the first period of Game 1 and the third period of Game 2. Nashville had a huge surge in the second and the third period, but in particular near the end of the second period of Game 3 and totally in the third period of Game 3. So that's something you have to control. And as a coach, you have to really wonder about who you put on next after the opposition scores. Now, if you score, you have to worry about it too because you can't put on guys that might get scored on. You got to be really, really careful about how you manage your bench.
There'll be moments in the game where if we've got opportunities to look for advantageous matchups, we'll try to look for them. But, you know, this coaching staff has never been one to take our team out of the flow to try to chase matchups.
Mike Sullivan prior to the game.
He's right on that, by the way, except for one thing that he carefully didn't talk about. On home ice, he utilized last change a ton to get Crosby away from Subban in that match. Or sorry, not from Subban, from Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis. He tried to get him away from them. And if you go back and listen to the tape, I think of the second Pittsburgh goal of Game 1, it was a mismatch. They had Crosby out against Yannick Weber and Matt Irwin, and they ate them up, and that led to a Pittsburgh goal. So they look for it, but they do it more looking at the other team's defense. And they do it more in terms of how they match their defense up.
They were certainly waiting for and badly needed Roman Josi to arrive in the final, and he did so in style in Game 3. Can you talk from your vantage point about the job? Because, you know, there are still some people who are looking at P.K. Subban and the whole bad breath remark that he made to you and all of that. And once again, it's P.K. stealing the spotlight and P.K. doing this and P.K. showing up today with some luggage and it's full of Listerine or whatever the fact may be. On the ice, what he is doing?
He's playing playing fantastic hockey. He is in a titanic matchup. He and Matthias Ekholm are in a titanic matchup against Evgeny Malkin, usually but not always, Phil Kessel, and usually but not always, sometimes Chris Kunitz and other people. They rotate the wingers around for Malkin, depending on who's going. But just to play against Malkin, that's a titanic matchup, and that's for he and Ekholm to handle. And it's not just defense. It's about manufacturing offensive chances and getting into the rush. So, yeah, really, really tough stuff. Really tough. And I would, anybody that doesn't think that P.K. Subban is contributing to this team is not watching the games. And if they are, they're watching it through rose-colored or clearly biased glasses. Clearly. You clearly don't like the guy because he's playing. He might be playing as well as he's ever played.
Piero, what did you think of the slight lineup changes from Peter Laviolette? I know you mentioned specifically on Friday, I think it was, Harry Zolnarczyk. He drew a penalty that led to a power play goal. Yeah. Parenteau got in there. Goudreau's been playing, but he scored. He's been a good fourth-line player, a nice story. What do you think of the small lineup changes Laviolette has made?
He's done a fantastic job, but the number one thing that he did that was so smart, putting Craig Smith on a line with Callie Yarncroke and Austin Watson. That line was the wrecking machine line for the Nashville Predators, and they did not play together the previous game in Game 2. So that's where he's so smart. Right from the start of the playoff, and that's why I mentioned Harry Zolnarczyk going into Game 3, because they need his energy, and he really never stops talking on the bench, so it gets everybody that much more motivated. He's like a third coach. He's an extension of the coaching staff. But Peter's had a firm hand on the rudder here, Mitch Gallo, ever since the start of the playoffs. Every single roster move he's made has worked. He's been really good with that, outstandingly good with it.
I believe that when these guys just focus on the details of playing the game the right way, then the opportunities will present themselves, and they're talented guys, and they'll score.
On the other side, Mike Sullivan still waiting for that power play to get going. What's the issue here?
Entries aren't good. And for whatever reason, and I don't know what it is, they are having a very difficult time winning the initial faceoff. So because of those two things, when you lose the initial draw, Nashville's very good at clearing the puck. And we've seen that, again, right from the start of the playoffs. You can ask the Chicago Blackhawks, who got shut out twice on home ice and could do nothing on the power play, and they had a good power play this year. So right from the start of the playoffs, their penalty kill has been great. And so the initial draw is usually won by Nashville, which is a problem, and the entries have been really bad. And Nashville's done that to every single team they've played against.
Shot totals certainly have not told the story in this round, and frankly, for the bulk of the 2017 playoffs. So I'm curious, in that context, Pierre, does certain real estate in the defensive zone be considered prime real estate in a time when getting shots to the net it's just so difficult?
The most important place to go is where Jake Guentzel went when he got the first goal of Game 3. Go to the front of the net and try your best to swing with the big trees because they're letting a lot of stuff go. Guentzel's not obviously a very big person. If you don't cross-check in front of the net, chances are you can do everything else and you won't get a penalty. There's a new focus now on cross-checking. I think the league and a lot of the coaches on both sides are fed up with the cross-checking. But I think besides that, you can basically do anything else in front of the net. So that's, you know, everybody talks about it. You got to go there. You got to get inside the hash marks. But everybody knows that. But it's harder to do than it is to say. And that's probably the prime real estate because that's where most initial shots aren't going in. They're rebounds or deflection chances that are going in.
Pierre, I mentioned the talk at Kessel tête-à-tête. I guess it goes to show that even the best goal scorers in the world sometimes have these creeping doubts about their own ability to hit the back of the net. What's going on there with Kessel?
Phil's getting frustrated because he's not getting the puck in flight. When Phil gets the puck in flight, he's very good. The problem is, and it's just a problem here, it's hard to move the puck cleanly against Nashville, especially here. Their forecheck is ferocious, and it makes it really difficult on your defense. So without Christopher Letang and without 100%, obviously, in Justin Schultz, they don't have a lot of great puck-moving ability back there. They have a lot of stopping ability. They have a lot of shot-blocking ability. They've got a lot of guys that have mobility, but they don't have that elite guy that can transport it from end to end. Trevor Daley's probably the best fix for that, but again, he's not at 100% either. So that's where Phil's getting really frustrated, Mitch. He's not getting the puck clean, and when he doesn't get it clean, it's a problem for him.
Is it commonplace for a head coach to basically assign an assistant coach to work with a player or two and just have them get some one-on-one time?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's a critical part of it, Rod. I can just tell you, again, when I was doing it for Scotty, working with Jimmy Pack, Shel Samuelson, and Gordy Roberts a ton. And then before that, I would have Larry Murphy and Joey Mullen. So you'd have a group that you had before practice, and you have a group that you had after practice, but you focus in on certain guys. No question about that. That's an important part of team coaching, and it's one of the things that probably doesn't get enough appreciation from the fans, only because they don't witness it. They don't see it happening on a day-to-day basis.
What do you think of how much the lines have kind of moved around for Kessel? Watching the game, I saw him. He was playing at one point with Malkin and Kunitz. Then I saw him out there with Cullen and Kunitz. I saw Kessel out there with Crosby and Malkin. They're really trying to move him around a lot, it seems.
Where he had the most success was last year when he played with Bonino and Hagelin the entire playoffs. 24 games, 24 times with that line. It was awesome, and that's where Phil's really comfortable. Not having Bonino for Game 3 was a big problem. I alluded to it just before the power play goal by Roman Josi. They said this is where they need Nick Bonino. Carter Rowney was taking the place of Bonino, and the puck went in off of him because he was a step slow getting in the lane against Josi. So there's a lot of reasons why Phil's moving around, but the number one thing, I think Phil became frustrated in Game 3 because he wasn't getting the puck, and I think they were worried that maybe it was going to bring some of the other guys down, so they just started moving him around.
Finishing up with Pierre McGuire, and we will finish with his in-depth look ahead to Game 4 tonight. But first, a couple of other items. And by the way, the rest of the series on the full NBC network. You'll all be able to watch Pierre and the gang tonight and the rest of the series on NBC. The Canadiens have signed Andreas Martensson to a new contract. There are a lot of fans going, oh, like, big deal. Is that a typical fourth-line guy, and that's it?
Yeah, that's what he is. But it's okay. It's not a cap breaker. What was it, 675?
Six, yeah.
So that's not a terrible contract. It's a one-year deal. It's almost like a tryout for the young man. He gives them something they don't have a lot of, size. And maybe they're going to try to create something with their fourth line, maybe McCarron, maybe Martensson, and maybe they find another person that can go in there and, maybe stabilize games. If they're watching the playoffs, and I know they are, they're seeing that it's virtually impossible to win with a small team. It really is. You got to have some jam, and that's probably what they're looking at.
Arpan Basu at NHL.com tweeted an hour or so ago that before going home to Winnipeg, Nolan Patrick spent some time talking to the Devils and the Flyers. They own the first two picks in the draft, of course, and the Montreal Canadiens, who own the 25th pick in the draft. Is this standard operating procedure? What's going on here?
You can interview anybody you want. You just have to put a request in. So that's not shocking. I have no problem with it. Maybe, let's put it this way. There's a clear organizational need for the New Jersey Devils on defense. Huge organizational need. Not a small one, a huge one. So you have to look at what Montreal has in terms of defensemen that are there.
Mm-hmm.
And also young ones that might be coming, like Juleson or Sergachev. But that's not saying that this is going to happen. The other thing is Philadelphia has got a murderer's row. And Mitch, I've been telling you for 2 years,
yep,
a murderer's row of prospects, at least 9 to 11 guys you would say B-plus or better prospects, and maybe even a couple more who have been slow developing but are still really good. They're not really in a need in a down draft to have another young guy. They got plenty of those guys. They might need established players. So that's, potentially if they were going to trade one of those two picks, maybe Montreal's interested. Montreal needs players. Montreal needs young players. We've been talking about this for the last 2 years as well. They do not have a huge stable of young players, and that eventually will affect them.
And on the Kovalchuk front, as you know, Larry Brooks reported that six teams are interested, including the Leafs, plus the Rangers, St. Louis, right, San Jose, and L.A. Darren Drager reported today that the Leafs, not so much. People making assumptions because of Lamoriello and Lemaire, but apparently he said the Leafs aren't that interested.
Well, the one good thing for Ray Sherrill, marketplace is now being created. This is how you go about trading an elite player with a big reputation in the league. You don't do it clandestinely. You don't do it on one or two phone calls. You create marketplace. And clearly, somebody is whispering in Larry Brooks's ear. Somebody is clearly whispering in TSN's ear. And so that's how you create marketplace. You don't do it under the guise of darkness and trade a player away, i.e. Yaroslav Halak, for virtually nothing.
So why don't you whisper in our ear something here? Come on. Who else would be in this group of teams here? Is it only six? Five?
Oh, I think it's probably more than that. But if you look at it, I mean, Toronto can say they're not interested. I would say that they are a little bit interested. I know Lou Lamoriello really liked Ilya Kovalchuk when he had him, and I remember the day that he got him, he and I were at a memorial service the next day. And I remember him grabbing me and pulling me aside in the church and saying, "You never thought I was going to do that, did you?" I said, "I never did, Coach. I never, ever thought you would do that." And he goes, "I surprised you." And I started laughing. I go, "Yes, you did. You sure did."
Yeah, it's pretty spectacular. As I've been calling it, a cup final like no other. And that's really been true, in part simply because of the city. Forget about the hockey part of it. I mean, you come to Nashville any day of the year, and it's, as they like to call it, it's crazy town. And it can be, and it is. And then when you put it at the Stanley Cup final here, it just, you know, ramps everything up again. So
there's your pal Bob McKenzie with Connor McKenna, Sean Starr, Sean Coleman in for Rick Moffitt this morning on TSN 690. So again, here we go. Second Stanley Cup final game in the city of Nashville. What do you expect tonight, Pierre?
It'll still be really loud, obviously. Probably not as loud only because people haven't had a chance to spend the day, drinking rocket fuel. Because it's a work day. So it's a little different from Saturday afternoon into Saturday night versus Monday at work into Monday night at the rink. Probably won't be as loud, but I would expect that the warm-up will still be very emotional for the Nashville players. They'll probably have a surge early. But Pittsburgh, it's up to them, especially Crosby and Malkin, to step up. The big key, I think, for Pittsburgh is if Bonino can play. If Bonino can play at, let's say, 85 to 90%, that really helps him. If he can't, then Pittsburgh's really going to need that much more from Malkin, Kessel, and obviously Crosby. But I would say the biggest thing is if Pittsburgh can get a two-goal lead, that changes the dynamic of the noise level in here. If they can't, then they're in for a really long night in terms of battling through a lot of adversity.
Very much looking forward to watching you guys for the rest of the way beginning tonight. Thanks as always, Pierre. We'll talk tomorrow.
Yes, sir, Mitch. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Have a good night, everybody.
And if you are not in front of your television set, we have the NBC radio feed with Kenny Albert, Joe Micheletti, and Ray Ferraro right here on TSN 690.